And so I'd like to invite Caitlin up now. For those of you who haven't been regularly attending, we've had Caitlin share a poem with us every Sunday this month, except the first, right? We got a slow start on the new year. But I asked Caitlin to do this because she has a practice of periodically participating in these 30, they're called 30-30, where she has to write a poem every day for 30 days. And it's part of the discipline of becoming a writer. And as she's rushing through this exercise, I suspect that it's not always clear to her the fullness of what the poem means on the day that she writes it. And since I was talking about hindsight today, I wanted to invite her up here, not just to read a poem, which deals with, in my view anyway, hindsight and how we look at the climate crisis. You'll be able to decide that for yourself when you hear it. But I wanted to ask her to talk about her own discovery process of these poems in a kind of a testimony, and ask her, and then after she's talked about it a little bit, I'm going to ask her about the role of being able to share that with us as a community as she's doing that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I'm going to read this poem first, and then we'll talk. It's called Cans of Song Sparrow. Cans of Song Sparrow sit beside the beans, the sacks of flour, the 5-gallon jugs of water that must be changed every month so they'll be fresh. Plus, the tablets of potassium iodide I ordered online, which must be taken within 3 to 4 hours of a nuclear attack, or exposure anyway to nuclear radiation, and which stuff the thyroid with clean iodine to keep the contaminated kind from getting in to cause you cancer. Like stopping a lover's mouth with a kiss before they can say the hurtful thing. But that's not enough when you imagine what you will need after everything is gone. Not just food and water and the deck of cards. So the sparrow on the shelf. So the stacked jars of fireflies, also butterflies. A stack of pressed leaves in every color, vacuum sealed, to rub between our fingers and sigh. Enough for 2 per person per day for 30 days. I don't know how many we'll really need. It took a long time to learn to can the brook babble, and I wasted so many failed batches, but we have some. I imagine we'll save it to open when the blue jugs of real water are running low. I also have a store of smooth small stones to hold beneath our tongues. We'll close our eyes against the blood sky, crack open that single jar of cricket drone too.
So, this can be heard more literally as being about nuclear war, for instance, or there was a lot of talk about these kinds of preparations around the time of Y2K, which yeah. I'll be talking about today. But for me, it also felt like a larger comment on the whole climate crisis we're headed into, and perhaps even the hopelessness of saving everything that needed to be saved. And I was curious whether that was part of what you were thinking when you were writing.
Yeah, so this one, the title came from actually an Instagram post from a local brewery in Brandon that names their beers after birds. So there was like, cans of Song Sparrow available tomorrow. And I was like, what? and it made me think about like, what are the things that that are important to keep, right? And how do we try to prepare, and how do we try to keep them, and what in like some future apocalyptic hellscape would we really miss, right? And like what can't we save in, you know, what can you not put away in your basement, right? Like what can only really be saved in the world as it is, and how in the preparation, like I think about like this stuff with some degree of reality, and like the there's a tension for me between like I can prepare some things to help my family if like, you know, the world as we know it breaks down, but the world as we know it like is so much bigger, and what am I doing to save that, or what can we do to save that, and how those two pieces sort of interlock. It's funny talking about poems, because if I could say it a different way, I wouldn't have had to write the poem. So, yeah.
And yet, once you've written the poem, it's released into the wider world, yeah. And people make of it what they will. They find what they need in it. Sometimes they really misread it from your point of view, probably. And so, to what degree do you view having an audience and hearing from the audience as part of poetry?
I think it's a common sentiment in the arts in general, this feeling that that a piece of art sort of finds its completion in a way in the hearts and minds of an audience. I think there's one meaning that is found in the creation of a thing, and that is sort of complete in itself, right? You make a poem or a painting or a piece of music, and the act of creating it is meaningful for the artist. And sometimes sometimes that's enough, right? Like there are poems I write that nobody else is ever gonna read, and I just needed to write them for the sake of my having to have written it. And then there are some that I feel like really are intended for some other heart and mind to also find. Folks who heard the service I did last summer before, I guess, I think of poems as sort of their own creatures in a way that are born somewhere and sort of like arrive to me to, it's not like a dictation exactly, but they have their own selves in a way that is a little bit more than just like feeling like a thing that I created. And so sometimes it's hard to talk about. Sometimes it feels like they want to be seen, I guess. And I thought it was interesting when you were saying that sometimes you don't know the whole full meaning of something. At the beginning yesterday, I was at the memorial service for a good friend of mine who recently died. And I was able to share a poem there. He had come to a reading I did a couple last spring, I guess, and recorded it. He was an amazing visual artist, and media artist, and so he had recorded it and made this beautiful little video out of one of them, and so I sort of told the story of how he had come, which was really sweet to me, and he had made this video, which was really wonderful, and then the poem itself had begun to feel really felt like it spoke to his life, even though it hadn't been written with him in mind at all. And, you know, and actually, I'll share it. It's really short. It's called Ode to a Zucchini Plant. And it goes, "What would we give if we knew we could just keep giving on and on until the frost?" And he was such a zucchini plant of a person who just like gave and gave in this like amazing abundance, and having like, it felt like that poem reached its completion in a way when I was able to share it yesterday in a way I could never have expected having written it. It was kind of a little like, I don't know, it was a really phenomenal moment for me to be able to have that opportunity, yeah.
I'll just say in closing that we really appreciate all the times that you share your poetry with us, and I feel like we're watching a great artist budding, so that's our privilege, and I don't think that you all necessarily get all the feedback about the way all of your poems are being completed within the congregation, but I hope that there are opportunities in the years to come for that to happen in ways that keep energizing you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I love sharing them here, especially. I feel like the poetry, the reading and the writing of poetry as like part of my own search for truth and meaning and search for sort of like my place in the world, and being able to share that in a group of thoughtful, like full-hearted people who are also, you know, on that search is really special. So I am grateful for the opportunity when it's presented. Yeah. Thanks for having me.